This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
Scott MacArthur, Dave Festchuk, it's Overdrive for your Monday, TSN 1050, and on the TSN Go app. We're all over Major League Baseball's trade deadline, which passed about an hour ago. Some deals trickled in a little bit after the 4 p.m. Eastern deadline. Most notably, Yu Darvish is an L.A. Dodger. Sonny Gray, much earlier, well, not much earlier today, but certainly before the deadline, it was reported and formalized that he's a New York Yankee. And the Chicago Cubs went and got Justin Wilson, a reliever. So some of the bigger markets, higher-profile cities doing some work today among a bunch of other teams. And we know that Francisco Liriano and Joe Smith are no longer Blue Jays, off to Houston and Cleveland, respectively. Now, joining us in studio for the next hour, and he is brought to you by Maple Toyota, our good friend, former Blue Jays general manager and TSN 1050 baseball analyst Gord Ash. How are you?
I'm well, Scott.
So, July 31st, each and every year, Gord, talking to different current and former GMs, they all have different opinions of this day. When you were Blue Jays GM, when you were AGM in Milwaukee, what was your feeling of July 31st and the trade deadline? Did you feel it was a healthy day, or did you feel a lot of teams made silly mistakes on July 31?
No, I think for the most part, it works well. It serves its purpose. It's unfortunate, in my opinion, that everybody wants to work right to the deadline, as we saw today, that happened at 30 seconds to four, the Darvish trade. But, you know, those kind of things happen. I think the best move Major League Baseball made was moving the deadline. It used to be 12 Eastern, midnight.
You guys got Ricky Henderson at like 11:59, didn't you?
Yeah, and we had to get him to sign a waiver on a no trade, and somebody had to drive, and he signed the waiver on the hood of his car and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, in the August 31st deadline used to be that if you traded for a player, Mike Flanagan is the guy that comes to mind, in 87, you had to be in the city by midnight on the 31st to qualify for the roster. So it wasn't enough just to make the deal. You had to get the guy there. So I think, chartered a plane and made sure he landed before midnight.
Wow.
That is something. That is something.
So those rule changes, I think, have made the day a lot more pleasant.
Maybe a little less dramatic, apparently. Yeah. But I mean, today, I think the theme today, Gord, if I'm looking at it from 30,000 feet, it's the rich get richer. You know, the Yankees add Sonny Gray to a team that's already in first place in the AL East. The Dodgers add Yu Darvish to the best team in baseball. What's your take on that?
Yeah, and the Cubs, same way. They added, they made a good deal a couple of weeks ago, but certainly made a good deal earlier today as well, or late last night, to add what they needed in terms of their extra parts, an extra catcher and another reliever in the bullpen. But, you know, I think the difference now with the Dodgers and Yankees from years past is they have the minor league talent. They're not just out there buying talent like they used to and having a superb major league team, but a questionable minor league system. They can get you both ways now, and I think that's really where the danger lies. The Red Sox are much the same way, but when you have the ability to have the kind of prospect bounty that those two clubs have, and they traded players today, good players, but still didn't touch their top guys. So they come away with it happy. And obviously they've added to their major league club and I think addressed some pretty important needs, especially Sonny Gray for the Yankees, because if there was one part of the Yankees club that was a concern, would be the starting rotation. They just didn't have the depth. You don't know how long is Sabathia going to keep on going. Tanaka, you never know in terms of how he is start to start. So to get him into that rotation, I think is pretty good. And then, you know, Darvish, he has not performed well the last month or so, but, you know, he's a good pitcher, and I think in that market he's really going to excel.
Yeah, now that's the National League West, and we know Colorado's got the thin air. Phoenix does too, but generally bigger ballparks.
Yeah, much right? Bigger ballpark, but the ball does fly in Chase Field, not like it does in Coors, but it does fly there as well.
Gord Ash is with us on Overdrive. Scott MacArthur, Dave Festchuk, and we are breaking down the Major League Baseball trade deadline for the next hour. Steve Phillips, who's kicking around doing some SportsCenter stuff, will be in studio with us coming up at 6 o'clock. So We can circle back to some of the big deals and some of the work the other teams did today, Gord, but let's get your take on the Blue Jays afternoon. So of the names that were bandied about, Francisco Laureano ends up in Houston, Joe Smith ends up in Cleveland, Marco Estrada stays. The Houston deal with Laureano, they ship him out, they take some money back in getting Nori Aoki, who is a controllable player through 2018, even though he's not a kid.
Right.
And then they get Teoscar Hernandez, who is a 24-year-old outfielder. What's your assessment of that deal?
Well, the Aoki part of the deal, quite frankly, is about money. It's not about much else other than the money, and he'll be a body here for the last couple of months. I wouldn't expect he's a guy that you're going to tender a contract to this season. So, you know, he's just here to kind of balance the books, so to speak, or at least take the sting out of all of Liriano's salary. And I will say, I really think the Blue Jays did better than I thought they were going to. The outfielder, the prospect outfielder, Hernandez, from the scouts I talked to, he has ability. He's exactly what the Blue Jays have talked about getting. He's athletic. He's young. He's got a little bit of speed. He's got some power. What scouts tell me is he needs some finishing. He just needs some more AAA at-bats. And, you know, he's a guy that could play a role for them. So I think they did better than I anticipated. And you can thank that start on Saturday. If Liriano, was it Saturday? Friday, Saturday.
Yeah.
If he didn't have that start and showed as well as he showed, I'm not sure that that today's deal gets done. Houston is a analytics first organization. I'm not even sure they had a scout here Saturday, but wow. You can be sure they broke down all of the pitches, the velocity, the spin rate, everything that they identify as useful and what they're looking for, and it sounds like they're going to use him out of the bullpen. The only thing I'd be concerned about is you never know about this guy's fastball command. Never. You don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing, Gord. You bring him in the seventh or eighth inning, you're up a run, and all of a sudden, before you blink, he could walk two hitters on eight pitches. I mean, that's just the way he is. But it's fascinating. You talk about one start potentially being the difference. That really is the case,
yeah,
isn't it? Because I would assume, and especially in this day and age with all the video and all the statistics, you would have the broad spreadsheet. You'd be able to see everything. But one start can make the difference.
Well, there's no question about Liriano's stuff. In fact, when David Stearns asked me about his stuff, you can't deny he has good stuff. And by that, I mean velocity, a nasty slider. His whole issue is fastball command. And if when he has it, he's very, very good. I think the other factor in this case here, especially for a team like the Astros, who are pretty certain to be going to the postseason, is they want that experience. This is not a guy that's going to come in, as he did for the Blue Jays, come in out of the bullpen and be nervous. I mean, he's done it before. He's done it several times before. So it's a big factor when you go into postseason. And I think what the Astros liked about Liriano is just simply that's a wipeout slider. He probably threw it too much, and I think he fell into a pattern where he would try to use it always as a strikeout pitch instead of using it to get ahead, maybe use the fastball as a strikeout pitch. So there's a lot to work with there, but I still think they probably got a little more than was anticipated.
So, Gord, when you survey the situation with the Blue Jays right now, I mean, you look at this team, it seems like it's hit a wall, like the magic of 2015 and 2016 that seems to have fizzled out. And so how do you sort of make sense of what they can do in 2018 if indeed the idea is they're going to be a contender because they're raising ticket prices 7% to 17% as though they're a contender. And they seem to be proceeding by not divesting anything significant today as though they will be able to be in the hunt for a playoff spot. How realistic is that, and what do you think they'll need to do between now and opening day to make it more realistic?
I don't really have any unique insight here. I've not spoken to Mark or Ross to know what they're thinking, not that they would tell me anyways.
But, sure.
My theory is this, from a distance, is that I believe, and I think it's pretty easy to understand, that ownership wants this team to be competitive. Ownership wants tickets sold. They want eyeballs on the television. They want this team to be competitive. And I'm not sure in their heart of hearts that Ross and Mark really believe that. I think left to their own devices, they probably would have at least retooled to a more dramatic extent. You know, anytime you have a changeover in regime, that new regime wants to put their mark on the club somehow. You don't want to just keep on status quo. But I think what ownership is saying, look, this is going all too well, and we need to maintain this if we can. It really reminds me of the Milwaukee Bucks in the NBA, who were okay, and they once in a while get to within a striking distance, but never would do what they needed to do, which they've done here in the last couple of years, which is go back to ground zero and start again. And,
yeah.
And they got some good young players, and they're a much better team for it now. So my guess is they're going to do what they can to put a team together for 2018, maybe make some more winter trades, maybe make some free agent signings. And then at this time next year, they're going to be able to say, look, this is not working, just like we told you.
Yeah.
So it's time to do what we wanted to do.
Well, that's interesting. So the tension between the baseball side and the business side, that's always there, right, Gordon, in any sort of managerial situation. But how? So in other words, their way of navigating it might be to say, look, this isn't going to work. Like, we're going to have a bad season to convince the ownership that it's not working.
But not that they want it.
No, you don't run into the ground on purpose, it's not going to go the way the ownership wants it to go.
Well, I think what they're doing is saying they're not going to believe it until they really see it. But,
right.
You know, on the other side, when you travel across this country, as I've had the opportunity to do this year, whether you're in Medicine Hat or you're in Moncton or you're in Victoria, people are wearing Blue Jay gear.
Yeah.
This is Canada's team, and they're watching it on television, and they're listening on the radio, and they're buying merchandise. That's a tough thing to give up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're wearing Blue Jays gear in Montreal.
Oh,
the younger audience in Montreal that doesn't remember the Expos.
Montreal's huge. I mean, I was in Seattle a couple weeks ago, and that's like, as we all know, it's Skydome West. I mean, the Safeco Field, and the Yankees were in town, but you still saw a bunch of Blue Jays gear in Safeco Field with the Yankees in town.
So Gord Ash is our guest for the full hour here on Overdrive in studio, brought to you by Maple Toyota. This is Overdrive with Scott MacArthur for Brian Hayes, Dave Festchuk with me as well. I guess there's no happy middle ground here. I look at this team, and we can get into more details about the way that they go about contending in 2018. But the way that you said it there, I almost wonder, are they, if you're Shapiro and Atkins, are you not kicking the can down the road? If there needs to be, to some extent, a reset here to pave the way or to get to the, for lack of a better way to put it, the Guerrero Jr. Bichette era. It's putting a lot on the two kids, but they're the ones we're talking about. I just think you've got to extract maximum value for your premium trade assets,
right?
Right, and
absolutely.
So for a guy like Josh Donaldson, if you're saying we're hiking ticket prices between 7% and 17% across the board next year, that tells me, Gord, and I could be ignorant here, correct me if I'm wrong, that tells me Josh Donaldson's not getting traded at or around the winter meetings. Am I way off?
No, I don't.
Because he's got to be a part of the sell job, doesn't he?
He does, but here's how I think this unfolds. Is they go to him at the end of the season, and they say, we're interested in an extension. And this is about where we see the extension coming in. And he's going to say, no, I want to play this out. Then you have your answer. You, as much as you want to retain the player, you can't be caught in a situation where, even if they wanted to trade him, back up a minute, this July, I'm not sure the market was there for him to the extent it should be for an MVP caliber player. He had a down year. There wasn't all that much need for third basemen around the league, despite what we had going on in Boston. So you're now going to put yourself in a position where next July you might be looking to trade him then. So I'm going to go on the offense here. I'm going to say, look, can we make a deal? Can we make a four-year deal with an option that'll take you into your late 30s? We're going to pay you market rate, whatever that is, this winter. And if he rejects it, which, quite frankly, I fully expect him to do, then I think you can take the position that this is a player we need to trade sooner than later.
Okay, so Donaldson likely rejects a four-year, because he would probably want 6 or 7 years, right, which would take him to 39, 40.
I'm sure he does, but at that age, and how many times do clubs have to get burned on the back end of deals to stop making these?
Well, and this
deals?
Is what I wanted to ask you. Yep. Do you think a trend began last offseason with those mid-30-something power hitters? Donaldson, to me, if he's healthy and right, is better than a lot of those guys, Gordon, and very good third baseman, and can do a lot of things on the field. He's not a one-trick pony. But do you think a trend began last offseason that will continue to carry?
Yeah, I think the trend began. I think the reasoning for the trend might have been flawed because we all heard about how power was an important part of the game. What have we talked about all year? Power.
We got baseballs with no seams anymore.
So it's a pretty important part of the game still and probably always will be. But it's I think clubs are becoming more judicious. We've seen hockey explode with 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 year deals. I think baseball has been through that already, may have learned from that, and is starting to scale back. It's ancient history and it's not worth revisiting, but that's what made the Delgado deal that we did so good. Yeah, it was a lot of money, but it was only 4 years. And it allowed you some latitude. You weren't locked in for 8 or 9 or 10 years.
Gord, how influential has Theo Epstein's model been? I mean, the fact that he came to Chicago in 2011, they lost 101 games in 2012, they lost 96, I believe, in 2013, and then in the drafts that came after that, 101 and 96 losses, they were able to get a Chris Bryant second overall and a Kyle Schwarber, I believe, fourth overall. I mean, that seems very simple in terms of how do you re-inject some a core pieces of youth into a team and that takes you toward contention very quickly. How influential is that in the game and why doesn't that apply here in Toronto?
Well, Theo's a smart guy and he did it that way. You're 100% right. Houston probably did it first, though.
Fair enough.
And did a very
But they
good
haven't
job.
Won, so we don't point to it.
No, but they're on the verge of winning, and they're a very good club. But you're right. I mean, and Theo had this model, which has a lot of merit to it, which is I need to be able to get position players. The only way I can get solid, good position players is through the draft.
Right.
Pitching, I can either trade for or I can sign. And that's where the comparison to Toronto stops, because I do not believe Toronto can certainly trade for pitching, but I'm not sure it's that easy still 40 years later to get pitching to come to this market. And you know, one factor is it's a tough place to pitch, a smaller ballpark, a lot of home runs, and the other is guys just don't want to put up with what they perceive from a distance as the hassle of being here. Anybody that's been here in the history of the club never wants to leave.
Scotty was just making that point before.
But they have to get here first to appreciate.
And that's why they were able to bring Jay Happ back. But right. I've told this story before, Gordon, and you've probably got a trillion of these stories. Mark Burley, when he was acquired, he was telling me, like, I didn't know Celsius to Fahrenheit. I didn't know how to go to the bank and get my currency exchanged. Like, these are things that are very obvious to you and me. Right. I mean, we travel across the border. We've done a lot of work in the United States. It's not difficult. To some of these Americans who don't know anything about Canada, we may as well be Mars.
Yeah, Dan Plesac. We had a meeting with Dan Plesac after Paul Beeston and I went to Chicago, met with him. You know, I don't really want to come to Toronto. Well, why not? This, and this. Finally, you know, we talked to him, and he came. And once there, hey, I never want to leave.
And he came back.
Greatest place I've ever been.
So it's hilarious.
It is. But that is, when going back to the Chicago model, that is the problem here, is that acquisition of pitching isn't, the full market isn't available to them. As much as it would be to the Houstons and certainly Chicago.
Here's what the Cubs have done, and I don't know if it's going to end up being exclusive to them, because I think you can look at some other teams and see this now. But I was fascinated, Gord. I mean, Jimenez was the big name of the four prospects they traded to the White Sox for Jose Quintana coming out of the All-Star break. Candelario is their final top 100 prospect, and they ship him out in a deal with the Tigers for Justin Wilson, a reliever, and Alex Avila, the backup catcher, today. If you go around the diamond, the Cubs have a starting position player at every spot locked in, either because he's pre-arb or arb controllable, or on a long-term deal like Jason Hayward, signed, controlled for years. And so it changes how you view your prospects at that point, right? Because right. Almost anybody's blocked, so you may as well use them as capital to go and supplement your roster to continue to make the playoffs and contend.
And even though they'll be a contending team and finish at the lower end of the draft list, they still have enough time because of those players in position, there's just enough time in the cycle to replenish.
So, Gord, yeah, so just getting back to that, I mean, the idea that they would take a step back, if maybe Shapiro and Atkins would like to take a step back, and yet they're being discouraged from taking a step back by a business unit that sees, you know, a team leading the American League in attendance and selling umpteen millions in merchandise and getting great TV ratings with this team that's made the playoffs the past two seasons. Doesn't it make sense that you could also draft your pitching? I mean, the best two pitchers they got on the roster right now are Sanchez and Stroman, happen to be drafted by, you know, the Toronto Blue Jays and happen to be playing for the Toronto Blue Jays right now. I mean, if you don't, here's the other thing though, Gord. So if you don't take that step back and you're just an 81-81 team or whatever you are, you're in that mushy middle, not very bad, but not very good. What would be the challenge of trying to draft positional players? Like how much bigger is the challenge to draft really good positional players if you're picking 20th or 15th than it is if you're picking 1, 2, 3, 4?
There's more obvious return at the high end because there's more profile of those players. They're more known. Once you get past probably the 12th to 15th pick, past that it becomes a little more uncertain. But, you know, going back to the pitchers versus players, the knock on drafting pitchers and developing pitchers is that you're going to suffer through a season injury somewhere along the line.
Right.
And what the Cubs said is, look, let other clubs deal with that, and we'll get them later when they're healthy. So if you look at the history of just Blue Jays, for instance, and look at all the good young starters, you know, Carpenter was hurt, Halliday was hurt, Escobar was out a while, Henken was out a while. There was always an injury in there somewhere. Yep. that you had to wait through. So that's really the knock on drafting pitching. Well, Billy Koch, another guy comes to mind, blew his arm out on the first pitch as a professional. So, you know, living with a position player just seems to be less risky. The data would tell us that these guys get hurt less often, and when they are hurt, it's less severe. So that's really the knock on that and why you would go one over the other.
Fair enough.
Gord Ashton in studio for the full hour. Steve Phillips, TSN Blue Jays and MLB Insider, in studio at 6 o'clock. Overdrive is back in a moment with Dave Festchuk and me, Scott MacArthur. Stay with us, TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. All right, the Major League Baseball trade deadline in the books went and passed about 90 minutes ago. Sonny Gray, a Yankee. Yu Darvish, a Dodger. A bunch of other moves made, but those, I guess, would be the two-est high-profile trades made on this July 31st. Dave Festchuk, Scott MacArthur with you on Overdrive. Gord Ashton, former Blue Jays general manager, is with us in studio for the full hour. So we delved into the Liriano deal here. Gord, a quick thought on the Joe Smith trade. I mean, this is an opportunity for a guy who, up until he got hurt, had a really nice season for the Blue Jays after a bit of a down year last year with Cleveland and, or I should say, Anaheim and Chicago. To go back to Cleveland where he had once pitched and potentially contribute to a playoff run.
Yeah, Mark and Ross have had a long history with Joe. Having had him in Cleveland, and you know, I saw his last couple of outings, and you know, I thought he was a valuable guy on the right club, somebody that can have him come in and face a right-handed hitter, and you don't have to worry about overextending him, you don't have to worry about necessarily pitching him back to back, but you know, he's a matchup guy, and he has the multiple arm angles, he has the tough breaking pitch to hit, and you know, I thought he came back from the injury pretty well. In fact, we had some limited interest in him as well. But I think what they've done is, you know, because their return is as I thought it would be, find a fringe prospects, guys, as some people would call them, lottery tickets, and just see what develops out of that. But you know, I think they did him a favor, sent him back to where he's familiar, where he has family, where his wife and his mother are located. So for all of those reasons, probably worked well for him.
Do you have an example from your career, Gord, where you, as you called it, took on a lottery ticket? You traded an asset. It doesn't have to be on July 31st, but you traded an asset for maybe he turns into something, and suddenly he did?
Well, not that comes immediately to mind. I think we were more in the business, fortunately, of trying to acquire talent to help our major league team get better. But I'm trying to think of some younger. Well, I guess the best example, and it wasn't really a trade for the player himself, but we traded for Graham Lloyd. Graham Lloyd became a compensation player, and with that compensation pick, we got Dustin McGowan. So that's probably, and he could have been a whole lot better than he was had he stayed healthy, but. You know, that's probably the best example that comes quickly to mind.
So let's break that down, Gord. So we got this Thomas Pannone, I guess we're pronouncing it. He's 22 years old, which is, I would say, older for a double-A guy. Is that fair to say, Gord? And what will be separating him from a guy who's on a faster track, and what will he have to do to become a reliable major leaguer in your mind?
Well, given that he's left-handed and they seem to get they seem to take a little longer to develop and they get a little extra credit for being left-handed. And the age is a factor. The age, you'll be surprised now in the analytics world how much age plays into the formula of success. And that is a little older, 22 or 3, I think he is. Ross and Mark drafted him in Cleveland, so they obviously have some familiarity with him, and they think he's a guy that that can develop. And with left-handers, you just never know. When you go back through your minds for Blue Jay guys that didn't have tremendous stuff but seemed to be able to pitch well because they were left-handed, John Cerruti, for one, comes to mind.
Oh, yeah.
Who had a credible major league career, not with great stuff, but it was a good competitor and used his smarts to figure out how to get hitters out, and that's probably the best example I can come up with right now. But, you know, I don't know enough about this young man. You just put him out there every fifth day and see what happens.
Right. Yeah, well, that makes sense. I mean, you look at it. Nori Aoki, 35 years old, has been playing in Houston, not expected to be, you know, a factor long-term for the Blue Jays, but he's, you know, apparently has been telling reporters in Houston he's not happy to have to go to Toronto. I mean, does that concern you at all if you're Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins?
I happened to see the interview, and while he did say that, he didn't say it in the way it sounds.
Okay.
I mean, he said it in a respectful way that, you know, I'm on a championship club. I've been here since the spring training. You know, I want to finish the year here to be part of this championship club in pursuit of a pennant. And he's disappointed that he's coming not to Toronto per se, but to a club that is out of contention and is just going to play out the string. But he's a quality guy, a very responsible guy. But as we talked about earlier, he's not going to be part of the long-term plan here. He's just to finish the season in all likelihood. You know, we signed him when I was in Milwaukee out of Japan. He's a guy that can hit, no question he can hit. Shows you a little power once in a while. Maybe not the outfielder that we thought he was. He'll get to a ball. Maybe in an awkward fashion, but he gets there. but he doesn't have the greatest of throwing arms. But overall, it's a nice caretaking type acquisition to finish out the year.
Yeah, I mean, there's that GIF going around a couple of years ago, Kansas City in town playing the Blue Jays for that. That was right around the Tulowitzki Price
right
acquisition time, and there was a brouhaha in that series, and Nori Aoki sliding into foul territory in right field, misplays the ball, doesn't catch it, and it lands right in his crotch.
Yeah.
And so the GIF is all over the place on the internet right now of people having fun.
He got with there.
That. He absolutely got there, and he paid a price for getting there. Gord Ash with us in studio for the hour on Overdrive. So you know Marco Estrada really well, Gord, because he was a Brewer before he was a Blue Jay. And I suppose if Estrada had another one of his great seasons that he's had since becoming a Blue Jay, the club wouldn't necessarily be in the position that it finds itself, which was divesting major league talent on July 31st. But setting that aside, what's happened here? I just, to me, if he had had a good half season or maybe even one full good season and then reverted back to himself, we could have called him a flash in the pan. But he was good for 2 years plus 2 months. He was good through to the end of May this year. What's happened to Estrada?
And good in some very high-pressure situations.
He became we started calling him a big-game pitcher.
Yeah, which I would have never called him that, knowing him from Brewers days. But he is a guy that needs confidence. He needs certainty. He's a high-anxiety guy, and I think right now what he's dealing with is the uncertainty. Am I going to be traded? If I'm not traded, I'm a free agent. Is anybody going to want me? All of these things start to take a place in his mind that shouldn't be there. He gets cluttered. He's going to the mound with a cluttered mind, in my belief, right now. And he needs to clear all of that out and just focus on the task at hand. I really, when you watch him in a game and he has that glove up to his face and all you see are his eyes, and a lot of that is just to create his focus. This is what my concern is at the moment. I'm blocking all the rest of this out. I still think that, because I know from talking around, there's still clubs that were nibbling, talking about him, largely because of that postseason success. If somebody has an injury here in August or somebody has some non-performance, there's a chance he could still be dealt. And I think I heard you earlier talking about this. I think this is a good situation where trade him, go out and re-sign him again.
As your
fourth or fifth guy on a marginal deal. I mean, he's a good person, first of all. He's a good teammate. He's not going to cause any problems. And somebody, because there's no answers from within at the moment, somebody's going to have to nail down that fourth and fifth spot.
Well, and it's fascinating that you say, Gord, that the idea that he might have been moved at the deadline might have been the reason for him not being moved at the deadline. In other words, the anxiety that the deadline approaching created in him could be responsible for what turned into a pretty dismal June and July for him.
Well, that's why tonight will be very interesting. I'm expecting him to have a great game tonight. I really am. I think this is the mind is going to be much clearer now. I would think he still knows there's a chance to be moved later, but I think for the moment his mind is clear and I expect him to have a good game tonight.
Well, and he's also you know how we'll be on the radio, Gord. We'll say, well, he's facing Charlotte, the AAA team of the Chicago White Sox, right?
Speaking of which, there's a team that's done exactly what we just finished talking about with the Cubs, Houston, divested, made a lot of smart trades. This is a club's going to be pretty darn good in a couple of years.
You really see that coming, eh?
Yep. Yeah.
The thing is that there are no absolute guarantees about that, though.
No, Gordon, not at all.
Okay, so let me throw a team at you, and you just roll with it. I know that they've had some ups and downs. I think they probably performed better last year than expected, but the Philadelphia Phillies, they've kind of gotten out from underneath of all those aging contracts, right? With Ryan Howard, Chase Utley's been in L.A. a couple of years now. Jimmy Rollins is long since forgotten about. But that's a team that got really old really quick. And they're experiencing the pain of the aftermath of that now, aren't they?
But interestingly, though, they did exactly what we talked about. You don't want to do is this winter sign some guys they thought, okay, we're coming, we're getting better, we got these young guys, but let's sign Michael Saunders and let's get Howie Kendricks and let's get some of these Hellickson and let's get some of these spare part guys just to make us better. Well, got worse. Because it just doesn't fit that model. I like your mushy middle. They got themselves in the mushy middle, and it doesn't work.
That's an interesting point. I mean, that's Scotty. I've heard the counter to the tear down Theo Epstein, Houston Astros, Chicago White Sox formula is, well, there's no certainty. You might not get a Chris Bryant with second overall pick. There's no certainty that you're going to get that star player. But there's a certainty to what you're going to get if you're 81-81, isn't it? And that's you're almost certainly not going to get that breakthrough star in the draft that way. Isn't that fair to say, Gord?
It is fair to say. But I really think the big obstacle is it is not pleasant to, like Houston did and the Cubs did. And in a market that loves the Cubs, their attendance was knocked down quite considerably. It's a tough season or two to go through to look at your team losing over 100 games. It's not pleasant. There'd be nights at the ballpark where there's only a few thousand people, especially early and late in the year. I mean, I think this is a good enough of a baseball market now that in the summertime, you're still going to have your good days. But, it's April and September that makes and breaks your attendance in a lot of cases, and that's always tough.
But how much of that, though, Gord, is the way you sell it and the way you communicate the message? I mean, nobody can communicate a message when you're 101 losses into a season. But I think Theo Epstein did a pretty good job of explaining to Cubs fans that what he was up to, and he was pretty transparent about it, wasn't he?
Well, sure. He used sales technique 101. Under-promised and over-delivered.
Exactly.
I mean, he told everybody this is going to be bad, and this is going to be bad for probably two or three seasons.
Yeah.
And very, you're right, very transparent about it, and made no, no middle ground that, you know, we might do this or we might do that. This is going to be a tough go, and we need you to be supportive, because at the end of this, we're going to deliver you the kind of team you can be supportive of. And, you know, we got an example right here in town. Didn't the Maple Leafs do this?
Right. Exactly. And I know same playbook.
And I know the Maple Leafs.
But they delayed on it forever.
Yeah. But I think that obviously they're in a much different position in terms of support and where they stand in the city in terms of culture. People are going to go no matter what. That doesn't apply to the Blue Jays. But that model has been proven to work. If you believe in your scouting and you believe in your player development, you can make it work.
All right.
And so why can't they sell it? Why can't they sell it to upper management, I guess?
I think you can. It's just not time yet.
It's not time yet.
Gord Ash with us in studio for one more segment coming up on the other side. And then Steve Phillips will jump in. We'll get his reaction. He's been all over SportsCenter, TSN.ca. He'll be with us at 6 o'clock. Overdrive on Major League Baseball's trade deadline day rolls on in a moment. Scott MacArthur, Dave Festchuk, stay with us. TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. Scott MacArthur, Dave Festchuk, this is Overdrive on TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. Gord Ash, former Blue Jays general manager, TSN 1050 Blue Jays and baseball analyst with us in studio for the next segment. I'm reading some of Dan Duquette's quotes on Twitter here. Baltimore has acquired, did a couple of days ago, Jeremy Hellickson from the Phillies. Gordon, they get Tim Beckham today from the Rays, and Duquette is saying, hey, we still got a shot here. I'm always fascinated at the approach that different teams take. We know the LA Dodgers and other teams were heavily in on Zach Britton. The Orioles decided to keep him. I presume it's because they intend to contend here over the final couple of months. What do you make of what Baltimore is doing and also didn't do over the last few days?
I think it's clearly Peter Angelos telling Dan that we're still in this and go get us some veteran presence so we can make it look like we're still in this. It's always been a very unique situation. And, you know, Buck Showalter is a very talented manager, and I think he's made the most out of that roster for a couple of years now. But this is a club that needs an overhaul as well, I think. I mean, they've not performed at all well. They've had some non-performance out of their starting rotation this year. I know Davis was hurt for a good chunk of time, but, you know, another club that went through the wintertime saying, you know, do we want Mark Trumbo? No, we don't. And finally, in the end, signed him. So I think the Orioles are delusional if they think they can get back in it. I don't really think that's the case. But they're probably by ownership's decree, and I understand that he's a difficult person to work with and for. In fact, I'll tell you my Peter Angelos story. With Juan Guzman, we talked to the Orioles, right, whatever year that was, forever about trading Juan Guzman. Didn't like the deal in the end. And Peter called me the next morning and said, I'm going to sue you. I said, well, what are you talking about?
What?
You made a deal with our guys, and you need to follow through, or otherwise we're going to take legal action. Which I laughed at, because we had not, in fact, one of the Oriole executives called me later and said we had nothing to do with that. And in the end, we ended up making a deal, but it wasn't at the behest of Peter. So, you know, they're in a unique situation. They're in this marketplace with the Nationals, and the Nationals have everything going for them right now. So perhaps Peter needs to feel like they're doing something to stay relevant.
Is part of it, and he's been crazy for decades now, but is part of it an age thing too? He's well into his 80s, Gord.
Yeah, part of it.
He wants to win. Yeah.
Sure, he wants to win, and you know, we saw that happen in Detroit to some degree as well. But I think the days are gone where you can just throw money at your problems. Now you have to have a development plan, and you need to understand how to put teams together more so than just collecting as many veteran bodies as you can.
Well, yeah, the Orioles are 6.5 games out of the Eastern lead. They're 5.5 games out of the wild card. It does seem delusional to believe they could be in this thing, but I guess Dan Duquette's paid to say things that Peter Angelos wants him to say. But
yeah, and it's not outlandish. It's not like they're 20 games out.
No, but
when you're looking at the division the way it's currently structured, and certainly the Yankees got better, and you know the Red Sox are still a quality club, and Tampa, you can't underestimate them. Tampa probably has just a better shot than the Orioles do. But I just don't think there's just too many teams to jump over to think that's realistic.
What do you make of Boston not addressing their complete lack of power hitting right now, Gord?
Yeah, a little surprised because it has impacted them. You know, they've gone through stretches where their scoring runners has been tough for them. You know, they've got a fine defensive club. They've, I think, done what they can do with their pitching, but they just don't, you know, Ortiz, it's hard to imagine that one guy would make that much difference, but
yeah.
but not only was he the soul of the team, he was the run producer on the team, and they've sorely missed that. And, you know, they're hopeful that Devers, the kid they brought up to play third base, will help in that regard, and he will. He's a very talented player, but to put all of that pressure on a guy of that age in that market, and I can tell you, there's a lot of difficult places to play, but none more so than Boston.
Yeah.
Well, David Price can back you up on that at this particular time, Gordon. Yep. And, you know, like even Dustin Pedroia's leadership has been called into question by the media. And Pedroia stood up the other day and said, hey, I'm standing here answering your questions right now. Do you see anybody else doing it? I wonder when these guys in Boston say it's not fracturing the clubhouse, we're fine. Can you truly internalize, almost set up a force field around your group of 25? Or does this crap, when it's thrown at you every single day and you're getting asked these questions and you can't avoid the radio or Twitter or TV, whatever the case may be, the newspapers, can it actually get at you? Could this, what's going on with Price and the Red Sox media, affect Boston's season?
Yeah, I think so. And I someone used the word today, either in a tweet or something I was listening to, but use the word relentless. And that's exactly what it is there. It is relentless. And, you know, I remember being there late in my career with the Blue Jays, and we won Friday night's game. So Saturday's headline was, Red Sox on verge of collapse. And they came back and won Saturday's game, and Sunday's headline was, Red Sox on the way.
You know, right.
It's just so dramatic. It's so extreme and relentless, however you want to put it. But it is a tough place to play. But at the same time, if the players are united, it can, you know, anything that unites a player, you know, going back to the old Oakland days when they all had their fist fights with each other and so on, but they were unified in that they hated the owner. They hated Charlie Finley, so that unified them.
Right.
So whatever unifies you, and if a situation where it's us against them in terms of media relations, so on, that can work maybe for the short time, but it is relentless.
Well, that's going to be interesting. I mean, you look at the Dodgers, Gord. I mean, they've been the best team in baseball this season. They've been a very good team for the past handful of seasons, and they haven't been able to get over the hump. I mean, how much does Kershaw's problematic back bother you if you're hoping for that team to break through this year? And how much does Yu Darvish's presence, having been acquired today at the trade deadline, does that sort of make up for the fact that Kershaw isn't 100% reliable due to health?
It mitigates it some, but Kershaw's still the big guy, and Kershaw has a little bit of this David Price aura in the playoffs. He just not pitched well in the playoffs, and you know he's such a dominating force. When he's out there, I think it does give his teammates feel good when he's out there. So, you know, can Darvish replace that? I don't think totally. You know, and they've had some other guys have good years on the mound. But I think for them to advance to the World Series, not just the Division Series or LCS, Kershaw has to be there and has to be pitching effectively.
Yeah, and very quickly, because we got to wrap, the Dodgers have all the money in the world, Gord, but when you look at what they're spending on Bellinger and Seager and Peterson, these are all kids they've drafted and developed, right?
Absolutely.
We're probably paying like $2 million or less for the three of them combined.
It was like the year the Brewers had Prince Fielder hit 50 home runs for the minimum salary. You don't get that opportunity too
exactly.
often.
Exactly.
Thanks so much for dropping by for the full hour.
My pleasure.
Your insight was really appreciated, and we look forward to doing it again. Former Blue Jays general manager Gord Ash joining us here, brought to you by Maple Toyota. Red Tag Days are on now with 0% financing and lease rates on the Toyota Corolla and RAV4. Visit mapletoyota.ca. Overdrive, hour number three coming up next. Steve Phillips, TSN Blue Jays and MLB insider, to break things down in studio with Dave Festchuk and me. Stay with us. Overdrive on TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app.